And good morning. You're listening to The Call-In Show on New Mexico's community-powered public radio, KUNM 89.9. I'm Arcy Chapa. This morning, we're talking about the Comprehensive Immigration Reform Act of 2009. Thousands of immigrants and their supporters, fed up with empty promises about reform, will rally in the nation's capital to demand immigration reform this weekend. Marchers are protesting what they call the Obama administration's destructive immigration policies and repressive tactics. Under Department of Homeland Security Secretary Janet Napolitano, U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement deported a record number of immigrants in 2009. An average of 32,000 immigrants were detained each day in Obama's first year, and more than 380,000 were deported in just 1 year, an increase of more than 60% over the Bush years. Despite these figures, a rational immigration system is still as distant as ever. Joining us this morning with the latest are my guests, Isabel Garcia. Isabel joins us from Tucson. She is the founder of La Coalición de Derechos Humanos, a grassroots organization that promotes respect for human civil rights and fights the militarization of the southern border region. Also joining us by phone is Vicky Galbeca. She is the director of the New Mexico ACLU Regional Center for Border Rights. She joins us from Las Cruces. And in the studio, we have Rachel Lazar. Rachel is the executive director of El Centro de Igualdad y Derechos. Good morning to all of you.
Good morning.
Good morning. Vicky, I'm going to start with you. The New York Times referred to the march as a possible game changer. Do you see it that way?
Well, I mean, I think there are two sides to that story. I mean, I think that in general, there has been a great sense of frustration that immigration reform isn't moving forward, and a little bit of disappointment with the current administration related to that. But I think that, you know, there are people that are inside the Beltway, the congressional members, et cetera, who just are a little bit burnt out by the health care debacle and just feel that at this point they don't want to take on another controversial subject, and then there's concern about midterm elections. However, I think that this march, the impetus for this march is that perhaps there might be some outside pressure brought to bear upon the congressional members to maybe realize that maybe during the midterm election they may need the Hispanic vote, or because they haven't moved on immigration reform, it's going to affect the outcome of their election. So I think that it could play a role in putting immigration reform back on the table.
What do you think, Rachel?
Absolutely. I think that what we're seeing is not only a level of frustration because of the promises made to Latino communities during Obama's candidacy, but I think the level of frustration from what's going on in our communities. I think that communities expected not only to see changes, but certainly not expecting things to get worse. And what we've seen is that there's been a chilling impact on communities because due to the fact that enforcement measures, not only have they not stopped, but they've increased. And we've seen in our communities an increase in the separation of families, in detentions, in deportations. And the level of fear that we're seeing right now in our communities has also had a chilling impact on things like civic engagement, have had public safety implications. And so I think communities are organizing and saying, listen, we really don't have the luxury. We're talking about our families. We do not have the luxury to wait and to continue to wait. And it's important also that this is not just an immigration issue. Many of us who are non-immigrants are extremely concerned about the fact that our civil rights and civil liberties are being chipped away. We're concerned about the fact that our collective values as a nation are not being reflected by our policies, and that when most people understand what's really happening in our communities, there's a great deal of concern and there's a great deal of outrage. And that's why you see the fact that unions and faith leaders and civil rights and civil liberties organizations are coming together and looking at ways really to start pressuring our Congress to make some change. Regardless of what side of the political spectrum you're on, there is agreement that our immigration system needs to change. It's not working for our families. And really in this economic situation, we cannot ignore 12 million people in this country and ignore those people while we're looking at economic reform as well.
Now, the president met with Senator Charles Schumer and Lindsey Graham and several advocates, I believe, last week. And the immigration leaders told him of the pain caused by deportations and immigration enforcement, while the president, told them of the political obstacles to passing an immigration bill this year. And a lot of folks feel like this was just lip service. Isabel, what do you think about that?
Well, in a lot of sense, of course, I don't blame people for saying lip service, and especially with what was reportedly said, was not very encouraging. Question, I guess, that was posed by President Obama was, well, what do you expect me to do, just not enforce the law? And therein lies the problem. A lot of us have been involved in this for a long time, unfortunately, we're expecting worse. Not because President Obama is any worse than Bush, certainly, and he's my choice for president, but because those of us that have been involved for a long time have been looking at the building of an enforcement apparatus that a lot of us ask those leaders in D.C., what do you mean you weren't expecting worse, the worst? What do you think they've been doing with all of these national security measures that we have been implementing? Really, let's just start with President Clinton. You know, since Clinton, we have militarized border and we have changed many things of how we look at immigration. So in a lot of ways, I mean, a lot of people on the ground don't know that. Immigrants heard, you know, hey, there's going to be reforms several years ago, and Obama made some positive signs. But am I surprised at what's going on? Absolutely not. Am I surprised that there's more deportations under President Obama than anybody else? I'm not, because that apparatus has been built and built. And unfortunately, with a lot of our, not that we have power the civil organizations much, but a lot of the civil organizations agreeing to that framework, agreeing to this very failed thought process that says we can get legalization only if we secure the borders. I heard that in a little debate yesterday. The same it's a frustrating phrase, because that's exactly what they told us in 2006 when those of us here were fighting the same militarization, criminalization apparatus, and we got a zero in terms of one additional visa, but we got plenty of enforcement. So in a lot of ways, yes, there's a lot of lip service. There's lip service not only by the president, though, lip service by members of Congress, and lip service by our very own organizations that are, you know, sort of like at the forefront or visibly the leaders of these marches.
Now, the last time Congress tried to pass an immigration bill was in 2007, I believe, and it was defeated by a bipartisan filibuster that attracted the support of a majority of the Senate. And lawmakers say that at the time they said voters weren't convinced the government could secure the borders and enforce workplace laws. How is the current bill different?
Is that for me or
anybody? Vicki.
Yeah, you know, I want to add in response to that question as well. I think that for decades now, most of fields, we've been hearing the same rhetoric in D.C. related to immigration reform sort of being a balance between increasing border security and border enforcement, and going hand in hand with legalization of almost 11 million, 10.8 million, I think, undocumented people in the country. But the reality has been that even the 2007 Senate bill had these markers. It said, we'll give you legalization if you build a fence, if you increase Border Patrol agents, et cetera. And the reality is this, is that those markers have been met. The 700 miles of border fence has been built. The Border Patrol agents are up to 20,000, and just along the U.S.-Mexico border, it's dramatic, the difference. And along the U.S.-Canada border, they have like 1,900 Border Patrol agents deployed. But on the U.S.-Mexico border, there's, 17,500 Border Patrol agents, and that kind of works out to about 8.8 Border Patrol agents per mile, which means that if they could just line them up along the U.S.-Mexico border, just Border Patrol agents, that doesn't include customs agents or any other the federal agents that are along the border, they could probably see each other. So I think that there's a bit of a disconnect with this sort of continued rhetoric that says that we still need to increase border enforcement. I think that the reality is that that metric has been met to the best ability possible. And so I think that the conversation needs to move on to better address some of the things that have been happening because of this huge increase in militarization. What we have seen is a report of a lot of more civil and human rights violations occurring, and so that's where the conversation needs mm-hmm. to shift.
Well, let's talk about that.
Absolutely, and I think, this is Rachel again, and I think that communities, border communities, but of course communities further and further north are experiencing the impact of enforcement measures and of militarization on the border. And I think that is also why we do need to address that, but we also need to address legalization. And I think that it has gotten to the point where the debate needs to move forward. Enforcement measures have moved forward. And what we're hearing from folks in our community is that we need to stop separating our families and we need to move forward with some type of comprehensive legislation. And we absolutely cannot do that at the expense of border communities. And so we need to move forward with a unified plan, obviously, that that we're looking at legalization, that we are looking at issues of really... A lot of us are concerned about due process issues. A lot of us are concerned about some of the other enforcement issues that have impacted our community, and we need to move forward. And I think what we're seeing around, at least in our communities, are immigrants and non-immigrants saying, we cannot wait. We need to move forward. We need to push some legislation forward.
I'm going to try to get some callers in here. The number to call outside the metropolitan area is 877-899-5866. In Albuquerque, the number is 277-5866. And I believe we have Romeo on the line. Romeo, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I'd just like to thank the organizers of this march. I think it's really cool that someone's actually speaking up and holding President Obama accountable. He's made a lot of promises, and he hasn't really delivered. It's been a year, and he's the most powerful man in the world, let's face it. And yes, we can't, no, we can't. You know what I mean? It's mm-hmm. like he said he was going to stop wars. He escalated. Demilitarization, it's more militarized now on the borders. Stem cell research, he said he was going to be an advocate for that. His research, allowable lines, are... his list of the lines of stem cell research, according to NPR yesterday, is shorter than George Bush's. WTF, you know? So thanks for calling him on his stuff. He lost my support yesterday. I thought the stem cells was the straw that broke the camel's back for me, but it was pretty much this issue now. So it just gets worse, it seems.
Thanks
for holding him accountable.
Thank you, Romeo. Anybody want to respond to Romeo? Isabel.
Well, yes, this is Isabel. Absolutely. What Romeo articulates is what many, many people across the country are articulating. We have to march. There is absolutely no other way, really, to have any real change unless we have mega marches and that sort of thing. The problem, of course, again, is that continued message. And while I agree with Vicky that we can certainly make a case that, hey, we've done a lot here at the border. The problem with that argument is that, really, there is another argument about this border. Well, no, it's not secure enough. It's not militarized enough, which is why I think it's a real danger to argue that. I think it's high time for us to stand up and say the reality. The border with Mexico, migration from Mexico, has never dealt with the issues of national security. This is not a national security issue. This is not a military issue. This is an issue, a phenomenon that's created by economic forces, political forces, you know, like when there's war and stuff, and, of course, the social mechanisms, which require that we want to be with our families. And until we begin that discussion with the American people, we are not going to convince mainstream America if we continue conceding their own arguments that this is about security. And this, I'll tell you, the face of national security measures here in Arizona. It's 85 deaths now since October 1st of 2009. We have a 60% increase in the deaths at the border from this time last year alone. And so further militarization of the border, which is continuing, of course, is going to guarantee more and more deaths and will not give us one additional visa, because we are not going to be able to convince mainstream America it's militarized enough unless we educate mainstream America and have the dialogue that we're just not having. Because, and I understand, because it's so frustrating, we want it now, but the reality is the American people need to be educated about the history of immigration, how we got to where we are, and really what this the solution is. Really, people, if you listen to immigrants, their number one call is not legalization. It is, and we all think it is. It is not. If you look at what's going on in this country, the first demand is stop the enforcement. Stop harassing me at work. Stop arresting me and collaborating with the Tucson Police Department where they deport me. Stop the building of the wall. That is the number one demand of the immigrant community, to be left alone and be treated like a human being. And second, it's sort of closely related, but second demand is legalization. So it's time that our organizations really pick up their voices and demand an end to the enforcement. Of course, discussing how this is not a law enforcement issue, not a military issue.
Well, how do you start changing the hearts and minds, as you talked about this over the past weekend, when after reading some of the comments online from folks commenting on articles regarding immigration, you read things like, at this march, good time to start the mass deportation of illegals, check their papers out in D.C., find out who is here illegally and let D.C. pay their airfare home. Also, who do these illegal aliens think they are? Yes, who? They have absolutely no right to demand anything in this country. Go back to your own country where you have every right to demand anything you want. The best immigration policy is a rapid deportation policy. Hire Americans to deport all immigrants now. So you've got a lot of work ahead of you.
Absolutely. That is precisely why we have to have this conversation, because all of those statements, of course, are based on ignorance, right? On a lot of ignorance, a lot of fear, and with some people, it's racism, because let's face it, not everybody is a racist out there that is against us, but they have absolutely no clue that we are responsible for undocumented immigrants in our country. I mean, I've spoken to churches where they come and tell me I had absolutely no clue. And some people even say I didn't even know that this was part of Mexico at one time, you know. I mean, we can go that far back. It is precisely now when we have to stand up to these individuals, because what has happened since 2006, and of course, mind you, not just on the immigration arena, but we have permitted this very dangerous, extreme element to actually be part of the discourse. To us, they tell us here in Tucson, when they want to put all the haters in the middle of our May march that's coming up, what do the authorities say? Oh, they have First Amendment rights. In other words, we're in a really dangerous course here, where we have allowed dangerous fringe people to actually become part of this rational discourse, and they're not. They're not.
I would just like to say, and this is Rachel again, I think that, RC, that the statements that you made, I mean, absolutely, there is that sentiment out there, and they're getting more and more organized. But I'd also like to point out that I believe that the majority of Americans actually do support comprehensive immigration reform. And if you look here in New Mexico, the majority of New Mexicans as well do support and do support families and do support the integration of immigrants. And so the sentiments that you just expressed, I would say, do not express or reflect the sentiments of the majority of folks in our communities. And Isabel, I do agree with you. In terms of enforcement, the organizations that I know, including El Centro de Igualdad y Derechos and other organizations in New Mexico, absolutely have dialogues about the negative impact that enforcement has had. And we really need to think about the fact that not just the criminalization of immigrants, but even the fact that now Immigration, Customs, and Enforcement is part of the Department of Homeland Security. The fact that we are equating immigrants to a threat to this country was a very dangerous move. And so I think that the dialogue is taking place. I think that the analysis is there. Absolutely, we need to have more dialogue. But at the same time as having dialogue, we need to be moving forward. It's gotten to the point where people are hurting so much that folks and immigrant leaders in our community are saying we need to move forward. And at the same time as tackling these enforcement issues, which are already taking place, we absolutely need to move forward with some form of legalization.
We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back with our listeners and my guest, and I'll reintroduce them when we come back.
This is it. The winners of the two folk art textiles donated by the Santa Fe International Folk Art Market will be drawn on Friday. If you want a chance to win, we need to receive your registration by 5 p.m. on Friday. Mail it today or register online at KUNM.org. Click the Pledge Now box. While you're there, give what you can to help us reach our early bird goal. Everyone who pledges just $5 a month gets a stainless steel water bottle, guaranteed, whether you win a prize or not. Thanks and good luck.
And we're back. You're listening to The Call-In Show on New Mexico's community-powered public radio, KUNM 89.9. I'm Arcee Chapa. We're talking about immigration reform this morning. My guests include Isabel Garcia. She is the founder of La Coalición de Derechos Humanos, a grassroots organization out of Tucson that promotes respect for human civil rights and fights the militarization of the southern border region. Also, Vicky Galbeca. She is the director of the New Mexico ACLU Regional Center for Border Rights. And Rachel Lazar. She is the executive director of El Centro de Igualdad y Derechos. And I believe we have Betty on the line. Betty, good morning.
Good morning. I just wanted to say that I've worked in food service for 30 years and mostly with immigrant workers. And I feel that we are really great, should be grateful to all these people that come up and take jobs that nobody else wants. And then I wanted to say something about the wall, too. We've never had a terrorist threat come up from Mexico. You know, they come from Canada or they come from overseas. And I really feel like this wall is just this huge, racist, environmentally destructive project. And I think it should be stopped.
Betty, this is Rachel. And thank you so much for that comment. Absolutely. I think that we have a lot to be grateful for in this country in terms of the many, many positive contributions that immigrants make. And we see that here in New Mexico, not only with the economic contributions, and the economic contributions are important in terms of the important jobs that immigrant workers take, but we also have to realize that immigrants aren't just filling jobs, right? They're growing and helping to grow economies. So here in New Mexico and here in Albuquerque, all you have to do is go to the South Valley. We see that immigrants are also entrepreneurs and starting businesses, and that in communities that have large, burgeoning, growing immigrant communities, that's actually a good sign. Interestingly enough, in New Mexico, our immigrant communities are growing at a slower rate than around the country, and that's surprising to a lot of people, being that we're a border state. That has to do with our economy, the state of our economy. And so if our immigrant community were to be growing at a faster rate, that would actually be a really good sign for our state. So we do have a lot to be thankful for. And I think that One of the mistakes that we make oftentimes is we talk about immigrant communities as if they weren't part of our own community. And we're talking about the business down the road. We're talking about our coworkers. We are talking about fellow students. And so really, and especially in a state like New Mexico, most families are made up of mixed status families, some being citizens, other being legal permanent residents, and others being undocumented. And so we're talking about folks in our own communities here. And I think recognizing those positive contributions is absolutely needs to be the forefront of conversations and dialogues moving forward on this legislation, because we're talking about, again, our families.
We have Ron on the line. Ron, good morning.
Good morning. I had wanted to, the show today is great. I like what I'm hearing. I wanted to comment that well over 60 years ago today, the United States government created the internment camps for 11,000 Orientals, Japanese primarily. And those people lost millions of dollars at that time. And it was so classically prejudicial in the fact that Germans were not interned, Italians were not interned, et cetera. So sadly, I think that as America continues to grow and the, I'd say more the left-wing mindset of America, if you look at the representation of the left wing and you see a TV, a production or a meeting, you look at the faces, you see very, very few. You might see a few token brown faces, maybe a black. But the fear is that from a white America, the numbers of the minorities, especially Latinos, is growing. They're bringing in large families into America. They fear, as I see in time, and I live in the South Valley, they fear being, as they see it, taken over. We still have the visual mark, as the black Americans have in the past, the visual mark of something else other than a clear white skin, although European Latinos are quite light. But I think the fear and the prejudice and the discrimination of America slows down the movement and full acceptance of the Latinos in today's society, because we have a majority of non-brown Americans who have been made to fear us and use excuses like, gosh, these terrorists and jihadists look so much like the Latinos. And they use that as an excuse to create these fences and walls. And it's that particular portion of America, especially in the parts of the South, for example, where Latinos are not considered white. And that's the fear. We are growing at such a rapid rate that you begin to see the passage of laws that indiscreetly and very slowly try to keep Latinos out of the majority.
Well,
because within time, in a matter of 10 years or less, the Latino or Spanish-speaking America is growing in leaps and bounds. And whatever we can do, marches, anything else that can be done to make people aware that the Latinos were here well before the Mayflower ever even existed in terms of its arrival.
Well, Ron, thank you so much for your comment, which brings to mind that we should shed a little historical context into our conversation. There seems to be little recognition that the U.S., this is something that L.A. Times columnist Gregory Ramirez wrote at one point that there's little recognition that the U.S. is just as responsible for creating the flows northward as is Mexico. And he says that we forget that as early as the late 19th century, we looked to Mexicans to build the railroads throughout the Southwest, that in 1917, when Congress closed the door to European migration, it quietly made plans for Mexicans to fill our labor needs, that beginning in World War II, we imported hundreds of thousands of Mexican guest workers who familiarized themselves with life in the U.S. and shared their experiences and networks with their families and friends back home. And now we're seeing them. I mean, these are economic refugees, but they're being treated as terrorists or criminals. We haven't even touched on detention. And Vicky, can you talk about that? What is going on down south in New Mexico in your area?
Thanks for the question. I have to just, before I answer that question, mm-hmm. tell you that I don't know if Isabel is experiencing this or not, but whenever a caller calls in, I cannot understand a word they're saying,
okay.
And I don't know what's going on there. But it's just garbled. So I want to apologize if I'm not responsive to what somebody has said already. But I just can't hear what's being said. But in reference to detention, we have here in New Mexico, we have one detention center close to Chaparral, New Mexico, which is in a very remote rural area. And then the other one that's near Las Cruces is the one in El Paso. The one in El Paso is actually an ICE-run facility, whereas the one in Otero County is one run by a private corporation called Management and Training Corporation. And basically, we go out there once a week to visit with detainees, mostly to assess, you know, basically that they're being treated humanely and in humane conditions, but also to assess if they have been held there indefinitely or unfairly. So if we find somebody who's being detained there or experiencing prolonged unfair detention, then what we try to do is try to get them out under supervised release.
And what is the cost of detention? I was reading $1.7
billion. Well, it is. It's very expensive. The estimates are anywhere from $99 to $112 a day. And, in fact, currently ICE has announced a reform of the detention system from one that's based on a penal model to one that's a civil model. And which is good news, because I think what they're looking at is more alternative forms of detention, of placing people in the communities and not so far away from their family or legal support. And so they're evaluating the detention system as we speak right now.
And I think, I mean, it's interesting, RC, because we used to have a detention center here in Albuquerque that I shouldn't say housed, that detained up to 700 detainees at one time, and the conditions were so horrific that Immigration, Customs, and Enforcement, ICE, actually had to pull their contract. It is extremely concerning, the trend and the money that is being made off of the detention center and off the backs of immigrants. And it's important to remind our communities that we are talking about folks that are in violation of civil immigration laws, not criminal immigration laws. But yet, even though they're not in violations of, in most cases, of any criminal law, they are being held in detention centers, in prisons. That should be something that's very concerning. And because they're in violation of civil laws, they are not afforded an attorney. So there are some basic issues. When we go and have dialogues in our community here in New Mexico, folks are shocked that people can be held and oftentimes indefinitely and not be afforded an attorney, or not have due process, not have the right to defend themselves in front of a judge. The other thing that I would like to speak to, and Arizona is actually an extreme example of the slippery slope that takes place when local law enforcement gets involved in immigration law. One of the things that I'm concerned about here in Albuquerque is that although we haven't been seeing widespread what people think of as raids, we have programs in our jail. They're called criminal alien programs. One of them includes a program called Secure Communities. And these programs are supposed to be going after felons, after folks that actually put our community at risk, the small percentage. What we're seeing is that these programs are actually being used to round up and as an entry point to deportation for folks with extremely minor petty misdemeanors, as well as things like traffic violations. And so what we're hearing on a daily basis at El Centro is our family members calling us and stating that, you know, their uncle or their brother or their son got picked up, hadn't paid tickets because people are afraid to go to court right now, and ended up as that was the entry point for them to end up in deportation. And we really need to question a system. Are we any safer when families are being separated? Are we any safer when someone for a traffic violation ends up in the deportation system? We need to be thinking of the cost to our families. We also need to be thinking, we have now communities that are terrified to go forward to the police. So for folks out there that are concerned about domestic violence, about sexual assault, who are concerned about racial profiling, these are issues that we really need to be tackling, because although the current administration, the Obama administration, is talking about going after criminal aliens, we need to really question that frame and ask for data. Who are we really talking about? How many felons have really ended up being deported? Because in our experience, and maybe Isabel can speak to that, in our experience in New Mexico, we're going after workers, we're going after families, and on a daily basis, RC, in Albuquerque, we are having stories of families who are being separated. And again, we're not talking about criminals, we're talking about our neighbors. And that should be something that all of us are concerned about.
Separated indefinitely.
Separated indefinitely. And again, and I'm sure Vicki, you can speak to this. We also know that there is a lot of misinformation within the jails as to how these programs are supposed to be implemented. We, for a period of time, were getting calls from within the jail on almost a daily basis from inmates saying, I am being held indefinitely, and really having to work to ensure that people's basic civil rights and civil liberties and constitutional rights are not being violated. There's a lot of confusion out there in our communities about constitutional rights, and our constitutional rights are afforded to people regardless of their national origin or of their immigration status. That's something that we should really be working to uphold in this nation, but it's something that we're seeing violations of on a daily basis.
We're going to take a short break and come back with my guest, and callers, hang on. I'll get to you when we get back.
Learning Spanish is more than learning a second language. It's learning about new cultures. At Instituto Cervantes Albuquerque in Santa Fe, new classes begin March 29th. From beginning to advanced levels, their small classes offer the perfect setting for learning Spanish. For details on Instituto Cervantes Albuquerque in Santa Fe sessions, call 724-4777. That's 724-4777. A message from the tax-exempt Instituto Cervantes.
And we're back. You're listening to The Call-In Show on New Mexico's community-powered public radio, KUNM 89.9. We're talking about immigration reform. If you have a question, the number to call outside the metropolitan area is 877-899-5866. In Albuquerque, the number is 277-5866. And I believe we have Ellen on the line. Ellen, good morning.
Good morning. I am very impressed with your program this morning. It's very important. I'm just trying to determine a confusion. I think somebody said there's a major march on Washington on this immigration issue tomorrow, and that's at the same time there's a major march on Washington on peace.
On Sunday. The march is on Sunday, March 21st.
So, Rachel, talk about who's going, what's happening. I know that different states in the country are preparing busloads. I know New York is sending, or I read, like 100 bus loads in Florida. I mean, just different. What's New Mexico doing?
Okay, this is one of the exciting things to talk about. Even though we've been talking about, again, the chilling impact of enforcement activities in our communities, and New Mexico certainly is not the exception to some of that activity. Fortunately, we are the exception in terms of having a real historical basis in supporting immigrant rights in the state. And New Mexico has a lot to be proud of. And even though, again, we see what's going on with immigration, with detentions, with deportations, we have amazing immigrant leaders in our communities that are stepping up, that are organizing, and that are going to Washington, D.C. In New Mexico, we have right now, I think the count's around 100 people that are going. Groups like Somos Un Pueblo Unido are taking contingencies. El Centro de Igualdad y Derechos, we are taking 16 leaders that we are so proud of, most of whom are actually high school students that are stepping up and speaking on behalf of not only themselves, but speaking on behalf of their families. They are fundraising. They are, yesterday they raised over $500 by selling Mexican food out in the community. So people, you know, there's a group locally, Olé, who's taking leaders, and they actually left today in a van. They're going to be driving for 48 hours to get there. So there's a true commitment. I think, though, we have to remember that March 21st is one day. And it is an extremely important day, but immigrant rights, the fight for immigration has been going on for years and years and years. It's not going to be an easy road, and March 21st is an exciting time, but we see this as really a movement, and that this is one important day, but it will continue, and there will be many opportunities for folks in the community that are interested in supporting this movement in the upcoming year.
We have another caller. We've got Mike on the line. Mike, good morning.
Good morning. Listen, I just listening to this conversation this morning, I have to point out to you that what your experience with the Obama administration is so far is very much like what the gay and lesbian communities experience.
Absolutely.
And, I mean, one of the things I've seen, and it's really sad, is that first you have to accept that Obama's not your friend. That's where you have to start this. The second thing you have to accept is that the organizations that are primarily D.C.-based, their main concern is access to the White House. And if they stand up to Obama, if they go ahead, you know, toe-to-toe with that administration, what happens is the people in the Obama administration gets on the phone, they start talking to your donors, they basically work against you. So they're not our friends, and we have to really get past that. Neither is the Democratic Party. I'm a big Democrat. I'm a registered Democrat. But they're not our friends. And we have to figure out ways to make them toe the line. And I'm sorry to say that. It's really kind of depressing. But beware the Washington-based organizations, because they will sell you out in a heartbeat. That's what's happened in the gay community and the lesbian community, and because they want to have access to the White House. And if they stand up to Obama, if they stand up to Rahm Emanuel, you're going to find they're no longer invited to play.
Thank you.
And that's it.
Thank you. Thank you, Mike. Anybody want to respond?
Yes, this is Isabel. I think your callers are wonderful, man. They've all hit exactly on the nail in just a few words. And Mike is no exception. He knows exactly what we're talking about. The 12 or 13 people that met with Obama last week, that's exactly what they basically said. Look at Obama said, you know, I'm the criticism being leveled at me is unfair. And, of course, they talked about that there was a lot of activity in D.C. happening, people angry. But basically, those representatives, our representatives, played the good cop, bad cop. They said, no, well, that's not us. They basically said, that's not us criticizing you, that's them. But, you know, they played the good cop, bad cop. And I think it's really important to remember that these marches and what have you are really good. The problem is, the message is coming from those like you say, the Beltway people, those that want to continue to have access to the administration, they're not going to, of course, say what you and I want to say. And talking about what Ron said, I think his point is really, really good. We are normalizing atrocities and hatred. We're sort of normalizing. He talked about, you know, the left wing, which I don't think there's a left wing, but the progressives, a lot of them are very divided on this issue. And he talked about race. And I think that's an important thing to point out, because many progressives have not jumped on our wagon of demanding reform and end to deportation. And that's exactly why we've got to address them. And again, we're being divided with this good immigrant versus bad immigrant. And if we go down that path, of course, here we are stuck back again. Immigration does not have to do with law enforcement.
Absolutely.
It's not a law enforcement issue. It's not a military issue.
And Vicki, can you put a human face on the immigrant? We talk a lot about numbers and statistics, but what is it that people, or what is the biggest myth people have about immigrants? And you are down there, you're seeing them, and so are, and Rachel, you're talking to folks who are calling you from detention centers. What is it that we don't know about immigrants?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question, because I really do think that a lot of these policies have resulted in sort of a humanitarian crisis along the border. We go to the communities, that's the communities a lot, and meet with, for example, school officials who tell us how, you know, families are afraid to send their kids to school, or they're afraid to go and buy prescription medications for their children, or school officials going to the doorstep and dropping off food and medications. And it's just this level of fear and oppression, really, that is extremely tragic to see, that this is not really, and this is happening in you know, a country that prides itself for different kinds of values and goes against, actually, our American core values to have such a level of suffering. And I think that's the message that's just not getting to D.C. sometimes, is how these community members and families are being torn apart, and children being torn away from their parents, et cetera, and just living in constant fear. That story is just not being heard.
And why do they risk their lives to come to a place that will criminalize them for the act of migrating?
That's the question we ask people when they say, you know, why do they cross the border? I mean, they died because they did that. I think every one of us should ask ourselves that question. What would compel us to cross? It's love of family. They want to reunite with their families. It's love of family because they want to send home some money so that their family can survive. It's love of their own life, love of humanity, love of God. So I think that's an excellent question for people to say, what would make you cross? And then the second question is, what is our responsibility? It's a fair question. People, you said, what does mainstream America think? That, what do they see? That's what they see. They see their economic situation worsening, and the powers that be have given them who to blame, a scapegoat. And they're different. They're stealing our jobs. They're creating crime. Those are all the myths that people believe, and those are the myths that we really, really have to tackle, because they're lies and they're myths about immigrants. And as soon as people become more educated, then we have a better political conditions to pass better laws.
And I think, Isabel, this is Rachel, just to add on that, I think that everything you just said was absolutely true. And I think that we also have to acknowledge the fact that native-born citizens also have the right to be fearful, obviously not of immigrants, but people are losing their jobs, right? And people don't have health care. And I think that folks have a very legitimate reason right now in this country to feel scared and to feel angry. What we need to do, though, is absolutely shift that dialogue to the root causes of why people don't have health care, of why are people, you know, in Detroit and all over the country are losing their jobs jobs, and their jobs are being sent out of the country, right? We need to be talking about why corporations continue to benefit from these systems, of why we have free trade but not the free movement of people. There are very fundamental dialogues that need to be happening in our communities to also look at why Native-born citizens are suffering right now. And that's an important message that we really think that it's important to pass immigration reform, not only for immigrants, but for workers in general. We are talking about things that unite workers. We're talking about looking at fundamental changes in our economy that not only benefit immigrant workers and families, but benefit families in general. And so we really need to shift this dialogue. It's absolutely something that's impacting immigrant communities disproportionately, but we need to talk about what are the commonalities between families and workers. And RC, you asked, you know, what are the human faces to these families? Families are families. When you meet and talk, like with the students that are we're taking to DC, these are young people that dream of being nurses and doctors and starting nonprofit organizations. When we talk to the workers, right, they want to work, they want to support their family. And Isabel was absolutely right. Why do people risk so much? It's for the love of their family. And that is something that all Americans, right, that regardless of where we're from, regardless of our politics, regardless of what we think about immigration reform, there are certain things that most all of us share in terms of our values. I don't know one parent that wouldn't make sacrifices that immigrants make for their families. I don't know one native-born U.S. Citizen that wouldn't make those same sacrifices to be with their family, to support their family. And that's what we need to really think about, that we are criminalizing, right, workers, and we're actually criminalizing families and taking away parents' basic fundamental right to parent their children by separating them.
So the current laws are outdated. I think that's kind of what I've heard, and it's driving too much immigration into the black market and not enough immigration through legal and orderly channels for immigrants who want to work in this country. What is it the reform that you want? What do you want in this new reform?
Oh,
Isabel.
Yeah, I'll go first. I think if we really were going to reform, that we have to do divide it into three parts of it. Number one,
very quickly,
I want to scream out, we need to address root causes. People need to know that prior to NAFTA, Mexico fed its own people poorly, but they fed them corn tortillas and beans. And now Mexico can't feed them because they are importing maize and beans and everything else. Mexico's gone from an exporter nation to an importer nation. So we need to address the root cause of why millions are leaving agriculture as a result of NAFTA, and we need to address that right away. Secondly, we need to have real immigration reform, which means we have to reflect the reality of our history, that we have depended on the immigrant labor force to build our country. We should be thanking them and tipping our hat and kissing their feet versus what we're doing, putting them almost in an extraordinary rendition program where people don't even know where their family members are. So we should open up that immigration and just accept our fellow immigrants who are here and legalize them all. Meaningful legalization. And thirdly, dear to my heart, we must begin to dismantle this very costly and brutal militarization, criminalization, being highly privatized apparatus right now.
This is Rachel. I absolutely agree, and I think that's a good way to talk about it, Isabel. Root causes, legalization, look at enforcement and militarization that have failed. They've done nothing to curb the flow of undocumented immigration. So we need to make sure we have family unification. We need to make sure that we have equal labor rights for workers. And these are things that most Americans support. And we encourage folks, if you want more information, you can also call organizations like El Centro at 246 1627. We are talking about fair, pragmatic immigration reform that work for immigrant families as well as work for U.S. citizens, and we encourage folks to get involved.
And that's all the time we have. Vicki, any final thoughts, just very quickly?
Just real quickly, I think I agree with both Isabel and Rachel. I just have to say that I wouldn't be ACLU if I didn't say that any kind of immigration reform should definitely include due process.
Absolutely.
Due process for everyone. So.
And that's all the time we have. Thank you very much, my guests this morning, Isabel Garcia, Vicki Galbeca, and Rachel Lazar. Thank you so much for joining us. Our producer this morning, our engineer this morning was Shane Montoya. Our call screener is John Bergant. I'm Arcee Chapa. Thanks for listening.